Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got filmmaker Christopher Ninnis with me on Zoom. Hey, Christopher.
Hey, nice to see you.
All right, so we just recorded a wonderful long interview about Christopher and his career and his film, The Kids Are Still Here, which is, it was an official selection at Film Invasion Los Angeles in 2021, and it took home the Grand Jury Prize for Best Short Film Documentary. So Christopher shot the entire thing in Africa, came home, edited it during COVID, and you should watch it by going to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film, and boom, it's episode 9 of season 6. Enjoy it. It's an important, wonderfully made documentary. And we talked all about it and all about Christopher's past in the podcast before this one, because this podcast is about one thing and one thing only, which is the Discover Indie Film 4 questions, which are 3 favorite films of all time, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. I'm wondering if you're going to refuse overrated. You seem like the kind of kind soul that doesn't like to say something's overrated.
So, no, I'm done.
Oh, good, good. All right. Sometimes I give a pitch that, like, you're not saying it's bad. You're just saying that the awards didn't fit it. So anyway, you want to hop in and share your favorites?
Yeah, I just, for the record, favorite films limit to 3 is like the hardest task I've probably had in like a long time.
Yeah, it's like a human rights violation. It's like
near impossible, by the way. So yeah. This is my favorite films of all time at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. That's just, but, and really, like, I had to like think about, is this about, you know, I basically had to settle at that. This is about comfort food for me. What are the 3 films I could go back to at any moment and watch? So these might not all be of, you know, great cinematic importance, but more about what it means to me. But the first one is probably the most, probably everyone loves this movie, I'd hope. But my first pick was Empire Strikes Back, because I remember I was probably 8 or 9 when Lucas like re-released them in theaters before Phantom Menace. Do you remember that?
Of course. And those were the special editions, I think, were earlier than that, but they released them again. Yeah.
No, they were the special editions.
Yeah.
Versions in theaters.
Which drove people my age insane that all the little.
Sure.
That they cleaned up the beautiful, dirty film that we grew up on, all of a sudden had like perfectly crisp digital creatures walking behind dirty stormtroopers. It didn't work for us. But anyway.
No, but to an 8-year-old.
To an 8-year-old, I'm sure there was nothing wrong. It was perfect.
Mind-blowing. And Empire Strikes Back is the perfect example of just like a flawless sequel. It really improves on everything that came before. And the cliffhanger is second to none. It's classic. It's iconic. You know, it blew my mind. I am your father. You know, that is like quintessential film, like nerd. That's heaven. That is just the peak. So that's my first pick. And that was the easiest one. And that's probably the one that everyone would know the best. But my second favorite film right now is the 80s Little Shop of Horrors with Rick Moranis. I love musicals. I just adore them. I grew up a Disney kid, right? So I grew up with Aladdin, Little Mermaid, and Beauty and the Beast. So when I found out that the guys that made the music for those animated films did a live action movie musical, it kind of blew my mind. Also, the puppetry in Little Shop of Horrors, you know, Frank Oz directed the film, who is very famous for, of course, doing Yoda and the Muppets. He really knew what he was doing with the Audrey 2 plant. And they would shoot the film. It's so interesting. The plant moves so like fluidly in the movie, and I found out that they sped the camera up twice as fast, and they would record all the numbers at half speed. So the puppetry would look like it's doing these really incredible movements at an incredibly fast rate or speed, but it was just all camera tricks. And it's really just pure, solid filmmaking. They don't make movies like this really anymore. It's just like a warm hug when you watch it. Have you seen this one? You must.
Of course. Well, yeah. I was a huge Steve Martin fan all my life. So the Steve Martin, Bill Murray dentist scene, I mean, get out of town, but you know, I mean, yeah, that's a, by the way, I'm just going to back you up. And I actually think Frank Oz is the least acknowledged genius.
Yes.
Because he's known as the voice and puppeteer of Miss Piggy and whatnot. And right. Bert and Ernie. I mean, because he's such an iconic artist as a Muppet tier. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize he's probably one of the better film directors that have ever walked this earth. I'm serious about that. Like besides Little Shop of Horrors, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is amazing. So many things he did are, I think he's insanely talented and people don't acknowledge it. They just see him as a guy who played with puppets and got high and made Sesame Street, which probably is true. But
yeah,
what you're saying about what they did with the Venus, you know, the man-eating plant in Little Shop of Horrors, obviously, like, that was understanding the medium.
Yeah, it's really knowing what you're doing and executing it to the finest kind of potential you could. And the music in that movie by Howard Ashman and Alan Menken is so good. I mean, very rarely do you get a movie musical these days where there's not a single boring song in the film. And the soundtrack is awesome. Like, I cannot recommend this movie enough if people have not seen it, but it really holds up. I just watched it maybe a month or so ago, and that's probably why it's fresh in my brain. But man, I really, really just adore this movie. And the third film that I picked for my all-time favorite is A Goofy Movie. I don't know if everyone here has seen this movie. It's definitely like a millennial cult classic, but it is the quintessential father-son story that Disney has ever really made. It's now considered a Disney classic, I believe, but when it came out, it was a total failure. It did not do well. It was a box office disaster. But when it was released on VHS, it was, I think, cheaper to buy than like The Lion King, right? So every parent bought the Goofy Movie. I think it's just probably safe to assume it was a safe pick for parents, like Goofy, like that is obviously going to be appropriate. And I think our generation just grew up with it and with Powerline. The music is insane. Again, it's a movie musical. I'm kind of a movie musical nut. I love that stuff. But A Goofy Movie for my pick is the best Disney movie ever made.
I'm giving Christopher a thumbs up. I haven't seen a Goofy movie, but now I must.
It. Yeah,
I must.
And it's short too. It's like an hour and 15 minutes, and you would not expect it. It should be studied in film school because it is so perfectly paced and gets so much heart out in such a short running time that I truly believe it could be studied and taught in film school. Like that is just.
And should I be snarky and mention that I love the fact that I haven't seen it, but I love the fact that it's a Disney animated film about parenting instead of about being an orphan. I mean, all they do is kill parents in these movies. Every movie.
There's no witch. There's no like real villain. The villain of the film is a lack of communication between father and son. And that is so crazy. I mean, it's really the first It operates more like a Pixar film than it does a Disney animated classic, in that there's no fairy tales section of the film, right? There's no, it's not based on anything like that. So it really gets to operate in this sweet, undiscovered space. And it's also the only feature film from Disney featuring one of the original classic, like, five characters. I don't think Mickey ever got a feature film. Obviously, tons of shorts and stuff, but
that's true. And just like a part in Fantasia, but yeah, not not a film all his own. Interesting.
And they really like humanize Goofy in a way that had never been done before. It's just spectacular. It's really worth watching, and it's on Disney Plus. But that is a film that I think of all the time when people ask me what's my favorite Disney film. And it had such an important impact on me as a young kid, as someone whose dad wasn't around for a few years, getting to relate to Max and wanting to have a relationship with my father, who I saw as kind of Goofy, right? I think every kid sees their father as a version of Goofy. So yeah, I really, really just adore this film. Can't recommend it enough.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, question number two is in a film that is underrated.
Okay. Have you ever seen the movie Overlord?
No.
Okay. This is severely slept on because it has a tomato score of 82% from critics. So it is critically well-received. But everyone I talk to has not seen this movie, and it is such a shame because it is a wonderful genre, you know, period horror film. It takes place during World War II, where France is occupied by, you know, Nazis, and these soldiers go in and to this small little like village in France somewhere, and they learn, you know, their mission is to blow up this church. That is, you know, something they need to do. And they learn that the Nazis are operating and doing something under the church, and they're creating monsters. And it is so awesome. It's like a really well-made B movie. And I think it's really slept on and underrated. And I figured, you know, Halloween's coming around. Now is like the perfect time to check out something kind of spooky, and it's very bloody and violent, and definitely worth checking out. If you're into Nazi zombie monster movies, it's the best one. I don't know.
Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah. And J.J. Abrams produced it. And the guy that directed it, his name is Julius. It's slipping my mind, but I think he
Avery.
Julius Avery, and I think he's directing the new Captain America now. So I believe he is. I could be wrong. But yeah, so that's my underrated pick. Wow, I thought for sure you would have seen that one, to be honest.
You know, I missed it. I missed it. I see. I pulled it up as you started talking about it, and it's from 2018.
Yeah,
and,
pretty recent.
In 2018, I'll just use the parenting excuse. Sure. My stepdaughter was 11, and I think I was watching almost everything I watched was either for the film fest. Oh, no, the film fest wasn't going yet, so everything was what she wanted to watch. So I was probably just watching Frozen 100 times. Yeah. Or actually, to back her up, like the great Studio Ghibli stuff, the...
Oh yeah,
Howl's Moving Castle. So she was really into that too. So
oh my god, that's
but for a while. There's a little period where all my knowledge is just Pixar and anime, because that's what we watched.
Frozen over and over and over,
over and over again. She also, but actually had really good taste as a kid because she loved Matilda. Watch Matilda 100 times. That's such a good movie.
Love, like the Danny DeVito one. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my excuse for not seeing Overlord, but now I know I got to see it.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a list somewhere of movies that you want to see that you haven't
yet. Oh my God. Doing this podcast,
Yeah.
I guess I need to just become a meth head and never sleep. Because I could get an extra 8 hours a night of movie watching if I just stop sleeping.
That's a movie though that I went and saw in the theater like 3 or 4 times because I just couldn't believe it like existed. You know, it's like one of those very special films and nobody else saw it. So it'll never get made again.
And you know, I got to admit, and this is, I'm not intending to throw shade, but I feel like J.J. Abrams is an amazing producer. Well, he spots talent and I think some of the films he produces are often better than the ones he directs because I don't know, he doesn't really resonate for me.
Mm.
Like The Force Awakens and whatnot and other stuff and the Star Trek stuff. Can't believe there's one guy who's been in both Star Wars and Star Trek worlds. That's just not fair. Well, but Cloverfield and this, I mean, he actually has a real eye for talent.
His television stuff is great. He's doing a lot of great television. Yeah.
Great. He finds talented writers and he backs them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, this is definitely one of the good ones. His Star Trek films feel more like Star Wars films, don't they?
They don't feel like Star Trek.
No, they really don't. And I like his Star Trek films actually. Like, but it's probably because I love Star Wars. But, We were just watching.
I mean, again, I think he's super talented. And I was going to mention, like, I just re-binged Lost and thought it was brilliant. And again, that was him finding some writers he believed in and working with them and letting them run with it. But I think he can't write an ending. Like his Star Trek films, like the third act always kind of falls apart for me.
He's really good at like asking questions though.
He sets up a wonderful setup. And then it's like, oh, I'm just going to cheat. I'm going to write myself a secret escape route instead of coming up with an ending I would have never thought of. But super, anyway,
it's a lot like that too.
Super talented guy. Don't mean to insult him, but
no.
I think he's doing all right, even without me. And he might even, you know, if he and I were drinking wine around the pool someday, he might go, oh no, I'm much better at spotting talent than writing stuff for myself. What am I going to do? Say no.
He gave a great quote I'm going to misquote it right now, but he said something along the lines of like, if you watched Force Awakens and you loved it, like that's awesome. It was made for you. And if you watch Force Awakens and you think that it is a rehash of the original and it's too similar, I could not respect you more. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. You're acknowledging that you just...
And by the way, I threw shade at... Yeah, I didn't like the third act of that. I didn't hate it. But I thought I liked a lot of... I thought Force Awakens was really strong.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a hater of it. But I'm a bigger lover of Rogue One. So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's time for you. I don't want to get you... Obviously, we could talk about Star Wars for too long. So what's your overrated?
Okay. So this film has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is considered one of the all-time greats, but I think it is so boring and I just don't get it. And I'm really afraid that people are going to like hate on me for this. But Apocalypse Now is so excruciatingly painful to watch to me. I don't know why. I love like the Godfather movies. Like I love Coppola. I just, for some reason, Apocalypse Now has never resonated with me. And I
got nothing to say about it because I thought it was like everybody who saw it in the 80s. I thought it was, it was this amazing blah, 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 Vietnam, blah, blah, blah. But one of the things I'm learning is some things don't hold up. And I haven't revisited that to have any clue if it holds up today. It might not hold up.
Well, I know
just remember all the golden moments.
I know there's a few versions of the film too. So I've probably mixing some things up in my head, but I do love the documentary his wife made about him making the movie Hearts of Darkness, which is all, like incredible. I think I enjoy watching Francis Ford Coppola slip into madness more than watching his film that he made while he was going crazy. But yeah, it's for some reason, Apocalypse Now has never really, and I love war films. Like I love, you know, I have no problem with that genre, but yeah, that movie has always felt long to me. And, I think it's like 3 hours. It's a little lengthy and, he gives, they have some really great performances, but like, Marlon Brando is so bizarre in that movie. He's like lurking in the shadows and mumbling nonsense. And I'm so sorry. I think it's overrated.
Fair enough. I don't think you'll get any hate for that.
Listen, I think I also had to watch it like 6 times in film school. And at a certain point, I'm like, you guys, there's other films that we can watch.
Often it's the ones that get assigned in a film studies program that it's like, really? That's what you're holding up is something I've got. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So the last question is something lesser known to seek out.
So I'm a huge fan of Hitchcock. Again, I was thinking about October coming up and films that kind of fit the season. And I think everyone knows Psycho and everyone has seen Rear Window and North by Northwest. But he has a film called Rope that is really, really wonderful. It's got like a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. And what makes Rope so wonderful is it was I believe a stage play first. And if you watch the film, it really feels like a play because it all takes place in one location. But he actually shot the movie to look like it's one continuous shot, which was really ahead of its time. And everything is staged out so the film reel would end at like the 14, 15 minute mark or whatever it was. And he'll transition in and out into the next reel really cleverly. But the whole premise, and this isn't really giving anything away because it happens in the first 60 seconds of the film, but these two friends, these two guys kill their best friend and they choke him to death with a rope and they put his body into a, not a wardrobe. What am I thinking of? It's like a big, kind of hollow coffee table.
Armoire?
It's like a chest kind of, and they're throwing him a going away party because that guy's going to be leaving. And so everyone comes over and they're serving like hors d'oeuvres and appetizers on top of what is essentially his grave, right? Or his casket. So, and the whole premise is, can they and will they get away with this murder? And it is a really wonderful, James Stewart's in it. And it's just a really wonderful Hitchcock film that I feel like doesn't really get a lot of love or attention, but is just, it's one of those rare, and Hitchcock made a lot of films and a lot of them are not very good, if I'm being honest. But when he really hits, he really hits and he makes awesome films. But this is one of those rare ones that just didn't get very popular, I think. But really just really fun to watch and a really cool mystery thriller, especially for around Halloween time.
For sure. And I think I saw it, but so long ago, because I had a real Hitchcock phase and I remember, you know, growing up, I actually grew up in Studio City where you now live.
Oh yeah.
And there was a 2020 video on Ventura Boulevard that like they had sections by director. And so
cool. You know,
at like 14, 15, I think I was like pilfering the, not pilfering, but I was renting from the Hitchcock section all I could. But yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. All right. Well, we made it through the list.
Yeah. Those are my picks.
Excellent picks. I almost want to ask you even though we should get going.
Yeah.
So Empire Strikes Back.
Sure.
Above the first film.
Definitely.
I know a lot of people feel that way. A lot of people feel that way.
Listen, I love the whole original trilogy. I mean, Star Wars is mind-blowing to me.
Right, because you were young enough that Return of the Jedi didn't annoy you.
The Ewoks don't bother me.
Why would they?
You know, it bothers me now that they blink. Like, that bothers me on the new Blu-rays they put out and all the new, they like revised them again.
See, just like we didn't like the special editions. When you go in and you digitally change shit in a beloved movie.
So dumb.
Like, you're like, really? Why?
Because they have like these button eyes and then they're like blinking now. And I'm like, where are the eyelids? Like, where are they come? Like, what am I looking at? It doesn't make sense. But no, Empire edges out A New Hope. You know, I think I got to be careful. I think A New Hope is really terrific. And I actually think Rogue One makes A New Hope even better. It like really improves it. You and I could talk about Star Wars all day, but I think Empire is really Star Wars like at its best.
Well, Empire, especially if you love the mythos,
yeah,
and where it went, Empire is where they took the story of A New Hope and turned it into a space opera, right? Like,
yeah,
just a whole new level of complications. Whereas, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Star Wars, the movie Star Wars I saw in 1977 that I still don't want to call A New Hope, but I get it. It's A New Hope. And I think it's remarkable the way Rogue One feeds right into it. Just remarkable.
The original Star Wars feels like a serial, like a, there's like a very like episodic kind of, I mean, they're all like that, but like for some reason, A New Hope really stands out as like a Flash Gordon-y kind of.
Yeah. And with those wipes and the,
But for some reason, Empire just feels more world-buildy and bigger and scopier and
Oh, it does. It totally turned it into a universe.
Totally.
Whereas the first film is a story that takes place in a universe, but the universe isn't so fleshed out. I get that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but, hey. No, I didn't mean to cut you off, but...
No. That's, yeah.
You know, I want to, you know, delve into Star Wars a little more because, you know, in theory, it's almost true that we should ask if there were questions 5 and 6, or I could start a separate podcast called, you know, Talking Jedi or something and just say, what's your favorite Star Wars film and what's your least favorite Star Wars film? And we just hash it out over, like, you know.
We could just start an Andor podcast because that starts.
I haven't watched yet. I always wait till they're all up, but
yeah.
It actually, the guy who, so have you, you know, Discover Indie Film season 6 just came out. Did you get a chance to watch my roommate, the Jedi? Yeah.
No, I saw the promo for it. There was a, you know, the video of like all the episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. The trailer.
And I saw like the quick, whatever, 2 or 3 second, you know, of that. And I was like, what? Someone got to make a Star Wars? I was like, that's the coolest. I was immediately jealous.
Dude, he did. So my roommate, the .. was a web series that two roommates made. They just kept making, they were not quite viral, but they had like 60,000 followers on YouTube for my roommate, the, and they were going to wrap it up. And he's like, huge Star Wars fan. He's like, you know what? I got an idea. Let's go out with a bang and make our last episode, My Roommate, the Jedi.
And, that's awesome.
And it's amazing because the Empire attacks Los Angeles, current day Los Angeles.
What?
Which is like the best idea I ever heard.
I instantly want to watch that. I'm going to advocate that people go watch that from season 6.
It's, and you know what? And then even more amazingly, he had a couple people lined up to help with effects and things, and they all got too busy with their careers. And so he spent, I think, 5 years doing every effect himself, learning how to do it, learning how to make a laser beam go by a stormtrooper and have it reflect in his costume as it goes by. Like,
oh God.
And he specifically went after the look, because lightsabers change throughout the Star Wars history. So a true fan like you might notice that his lightsabers are Empire Strikes Back lightsabers. Because like the look and feel and the way they move, he went for that. Like, I don't know. It's a fan's... It's pretty crazy. And there is a chance... I shouldn't say this out loud, knock on wood. But there is a chance that somehow, like, maybe Disney will shut that down and I'll have to pull it out. But, you know, for now we're going with it because Lucasfilm always supported fan fiction, always supported fan films.
Yeah.
And, you know, they always understood that people using the Star Wars universe and expanding it and making fun stories. I don't know if you saw Troops, the Stormtrooper version of Cops. The TV show Cops. Oh my God. Look it up on YouTube right now. Right when we get off this.
Yeah.
It was a YouTube video where it's just, you know, the show Cops that ran forever on TV. Same format, but Stormtroopers like stopping Ewoks, asking them for their driver's license, giving them a hard time.
That's hilarious.
Raking up domestic violence problems. It's just so freaking genius. And allegedly, Lucasfilm like gave them some assets. Like after they saw it, they're like, oh, here, I don't know, allegedly. But so anyway,
that's awesome.
It is. Cause you shouldn't, you know, there's copyright protection and I'm a big believer in not torrenting things and not stealing things. Yeah. But if you're saluting things, there's nothing wrong with a salute. There's nothing wrong with an homage.
Yeah. It's all love. It's like, it's just love for Star Wars.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it should be, and it was always embraced when it belonged to George Lucas, but I don't know what Disney's point of view is. They seem to be, they're the coolest people in the world and they should be wonderful to work with. That's what I think.
Yeah. I think that they are great.
Yeah. And I have friends who work there and they all love it. They're lifers. Oh my God. People have got like over 20 years at Disney and they're just like, love it, love it, love it. And I get to get into the park for free when they take me as a guest, when it's not a blackout day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm impressed that you got to put it up at all. Like that it, like, that's awesome. That's so cool.
And we, Sherman Oaks Film Festival gave it its theatrical premiere. It had just lived online until we were the first festival to show it live. Because I don't care if something's been on YouTube for a year or two. If it's amazing, show it in the theater.
And you guys have the festival coming out in November soon.
In November, yeah, in awesome. 2 months.
Wow.
All right, sir. Cool. We gotta wrap it up.
Well, dude, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. I will close this out quickly. Everyone, we just talked about so much. And then we rambled on and had fun and had a nice conversation about various random things at the end there. But you should watch Christopher's film, The Kids Are Still Here. Go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film, go to season 6, episode 9. And at Christopher's request, watch episode 5 first that has, episode 3 has a cool animated film about an ant who wants to break free, and then a cool live action animation thing called EP, and then My Roommate the Jedi. So you have permission to watch episode 3
watch
first.
Watch that first. Yeah.
Then watch The Kids Are Still Here. And then after you watch The Kids Are Still Here, go to wendafrica.com, WEND Africa.com. And if you want to learn more about Christopher and his stuff, see as in Charlie or Christopher,
yeah.
G, I don't know what your middle name is, maybe George, and then Ninnes, NINNESS.com. So that's his stuff. That'll be linkable in the show notes. And I'm going to ramble off. Thank you for listening again. Like and subscribe to the podcast. Go watch that TV series on Amazon Prime Video and give it 5 stars and write a nice review and say how much you love Star Wars fan fiction and documentary shot in Africa. That's such a nice balance. And if you want to learn more about the podcast or the TV series that was born out of it, you can do so at discoverindiefilm.com. On social media, it's at DIFWins. Christopher, I think I mentioned that his film, The Kids Are Still Here, won an award, Best Documentary Short. at Film Invasion Los Angeles in June of 2021. So you can learn more about that festival if you go to filminvasionla.com, and it's at Film Invasion LA on social media. And its sister festival that we just talked about, coming out in 2 months. Goddamn, I'll be back in the theater in 2 months. No one had better bring COVID to that theater. So you can learn more about that if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Christopher, thank you so much.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, everyone who listened.